Hey, it's time to talk with Tom Skilling, sponsored by PermaSeal Basement Systems. And Tom, boy, are we happy to talk with you today. What an active weather pattern. What a few days it's been, and more on the way, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. We had still another line come across the area Wednesday morning, and that thing produced up to 65-mile-per-hour wind gusts and skies that looked truly foreboding. And now, Anna, we'll watch the next potential for severe weather, and that comes in from the northwest. It's coming together up in Wisconsin. We're expecting a line of thunderstorms to drop into the area from the northwest. So that'll be into the northern counties in the early evening hours, and probably reaching the city, sometime you would presume between 8 and 10 p.m. So that's about the time the squall line came across last night, a little bit sooner in some areas. And by the way, that first line of storms, Anna, the Weather Service has had survey teams out on the Monday evening storm outbreak. The count is currently 7 tornadoes. However, there is the possibility yet that they may discover there were a couple more that occurred. And you know, the way they approach that, Anna, these Doppler radar systems we've got now give the storm surveyors a pretty good idea where the circulations have moved. And then they fan out into those areas and also respond to damage reports. And they ascertain what the winds were in the tornado by looking at the extent of the damage. So when you hear a tornado categorized in EF0 or an EF1, that's an enhanced Fujita scale, 1 or 0, as the case might be, or higher, goes up to 5. What that's referring to is the amount of damage the winds have done. It's actually a damage intensity scale. And then the damage is used as a proxy or an indicator of how much the wind blew during that particular storm. So it's kind of interesting. Presumably, if you had a tornado touchdown in a cornfield and didn't hit any structures, then you'd be unable to assign an EF intensity to it because you had no damage to use as a reference. So a lot of folks don't know that.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating stuff. The other thing that I just would love for you to speak to is the role of storm chasers. I know that they can provide really helpful to you guys when you have eyes on the ground and they are professionals and know what they're doing. I look at the videos and freak out a little bit because I think, how can they be that close? I would be losing my mind, but can provide important and valuable weather data for you.
Oh, there's no question about it. You know, Anna, for years, ham radio and amateur radio people have played a role in all kinds of storms, from hurricanes to tornadoes. But, in this day and age of cell phones and instant communication, having eyes on the ground out there in the form of our spotters is really invaluable because they're able to relay what they're seeing and give us ground truth to what we're seeing on the radars. And that's indispensable information. You know, it's one thing to see a circulation showing up on Doppler radar. It's another thing to have a set of human eyes underneath the thing looking up and saying, hey, there actually is a tornado. Because oftentimes, because the Earth curves away from the radar beam that goes out in a straight line, as you get farther and farther away from a radar antenna, the winds that are being detected by that radar beam are more and more elevated above the ground. So you could be seeing a circulation that's occurring, 2, 3, 4, or 5,000 feet above the ground, and not sure that that's translating to a circulation in the form of a tornado down to the ground. So having people on the ground, our spotters, is really quite a service, really is. And then, of course, you've got law enforcement folks and first responders in many communities set up their own spotter networks. And they refer to their communications folks, and who often have the responsibility of turning on the sirens. So you'll see sirens sounding in some communities without an official warning out. And what that means is spotters for that community have spotted a tornado and have relayed the information, and they'll turn the sirens on and activate them on that basis.
How about that? So the spotters are responsible sometimes for just making sure that people are aware that it's coming close. I mean, that's amazing. And the sirens going off as well. Pretty incredible.
Yeah, it really is. It's become something of a cottage industry out in the Plain States, these tornado chase teams, because they'll conduct chases in which people, sign up to get involved, to go out and watch nature doing its thing out in the open plains and all. And it's created some congestion problems on some of these rural roads. But on the other hand, the information we get from these folks is quite valuable.
What information do we have about the 6 tornadoes, and you said possibly more, that hit us the other day? From what I heard, there weren't injuries or fatalities, thankfully. But what do we know now that there's been a little bit of time to have the science guys on the ground and seeing what they see?
Well, you know, it's interesting. There have been some farm buildings and structures destroyed. And you always hate to see that anywhere. A lot of these tornadoes, Anna, occurred in lightly populated areas and open, beautiful farm country. And you don't have the population density out there. If you'd taken a similar outbreak and moved it right into the heart of the Chicago area, we probably would have had a lot more damage. I know there were some spectacular videos that emerged showing debris blown into the air. And, you know, when you watch that happening from afar, you see pieces of wood and so forth, and they look small. And you think, oh, they're probably just boards. But when you get close to them, it's really amazing the size of this stuff that's hurled into the air by these tornadic winds. And, you know, I've seen videos where if you were just looking at it, you'd think, oh, there are pieces of wood up there. And it turns out there are actually automobiles in the air that are flying through the air, and they look small from a distance. But you know you've got a vicious storm and a vicious circulation if you've got this debris being hoisted into the air. And another thing that drives home is one of the dangers in tornadoes, and that is the projectiles that these things blow around. That's why every precaution advice for preparing yourself for a tornado involves getting away from windows, getting to the lowest level and hopefully the interior of a building, and hopefully even below ground, down in the basement or something, or in an interior hallway where you're not going to be hit by this debris. Because studies have shown that you can send a 2x4 through the air at 100 miles an hour, and that 2x4 moving at that speed will actually go through a chimney. So it doesn't take as much speed in these projectiles' movement to produce damage. And we had a couple, you know, in that Woodridge Naperville storm, we had people sending us pictures of these 2x4s that had been blasted through walls into living rooms and into through ceilings and all. So that's why you want to get as far away from exterior walls as you can, and windows are a no-no. You know, we no longer tell people open up windows. That is long since been abandoned as a reaction that people should take. A friend of mine once said, you know, a tornado will open up any window it wants to, and whether you've opened it or not doesn't matter. So don't take time, you know, when you could be taking some evasive measure and protecting yourself.
Boy, and that you speak the truth there, Tom. And we heard so many stories over the last 24 hours of folks who just barely got to their basements, and it just, you know, seconds matter, and you got to just be focused on and getting your family safe. And thankfully, it seems like that was the overwhelming story across our area. I want to ask you, speaking of pictures, I know you posted a bunch on the Facebook page for Tom Skilling, your weather page, collection of photos from across the area that are just spectacular. Also want to ask you what's ahead too, Tom, but we're going to check traffic. So
sure.
Back with Tom Skilling now, sponsored by PermaSeal Basement Systems. Tom, I'm looking at your Facebook page here, and the severe weather has brought some spectacular skyscapes, as you put it. I was looking up at the sky yesterday, last night, with my 9-year-old. We're just like, wow, the lightning was
lightning.
Wow, spectacular. Just amazing.
You know, it's something, Anna, we were remarking back in the weather office, there was so much lightning. And, you know, we have these little icons that show us where each stroke is occurring, lightning bolt, as it occurs. And there were so many of them that literally they obscured the outline of the counties. You couldn't see Cook County or Lake County, Illinois, or Indiana buried in all these lightning strokes being plotted out on the screen. But that's an amazing system. They literally, we get reports of where the lightning's occurring with an accuracy of just a couple hundred meters within seconds of the time it actually occurs. And they've got a series of receivers located around the country, and they can calculate exactly where the lightning is occurring. But you're right. You know, the skyscapes with these thunderstorms are amazing. First, you've got the air pouring out of the cloud with the rain, and that outflow produces those incredible shelf clouds, which are those rolls of dark clouds that you see coming at you. Mm-hmm. And usually, about the time they hit you, there's a strong wind gushing out of them or just ahead of them down at ground level. And then once they pass, you go through heavy rain. And in many storms, the tornado comes out of the backside of the storm. There are situations where they spin up on the front side under those shelf clouds, but more often than not, the really well-developed tornadoes, like the ones we had Monday night, are on the backside of the storm. So you'll go through strong winds, straight-line winds, heavy rain, maybe a period of hail. Then things quiet down for a bit, and that's the point at which you go into the updraft portion of the storm, and that's where the tornadoes spin up. And that usually is in the west, southwest corner of the storm, away from the rain. Mm-hmm. If you were to look at the storm coming at you, to the right of what you're looking at would be the heavy rain. You see a veil of rain reaching out of the ground. And then to the left of it, there'd be a rain-free area at the base. And it's from there that you'll very often get a tornado to develop if one's going to develop. And by the way, this setup we've got tonight.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah, it has the earmarks of potential tornado production again. So we've got crisscrossing winds vertically through the atmosphere. We've got warm, buoyant air. Be interesting to see, Anna. There has been some reduction in temperature that might otherwise have occurred because of the storms that went through this morning. But we expect the air mass to recover, to grow warm and humid enough to produce another batch of storms up in Wisconsin. And if those hold together, they'd be coming into northern counties, say up by Boone, Winnebago, McHenry, and Lake counties in Illinois. Oh, in the neighborhood of 7, 8 o'clock, something like that. And then that line would continue sagging southward. And the modeling we have at the moment puts it into the city, you know, in the 8 to 10 o'clock range, and ultimately reaching into our southern suburbs where it could linger beyond that a couple hours in some areas. And we had huge amounts of rain. Midway Airport had 1 inch and 2/10, and 1.15 inches of that fell in 15 minutes last night. I mean, that's really torrential rate of rainfall.
Yeah.
So we'll get some pretty good rain out of it.
Tom, how is it possible we can see so much lightning and we never hear any damage from it? There just was so much last night. I was sitting there thinking, yeah. Gosh, what is that hitting? What's absorbing all that energy?
Well, you know, some of it is intra-cloud and some of it is cloud to ground. And so, in other words, you can get lightning bolts flashing within the cloud, and that leads to that dramatic internal illumination of the cloud that you see at times. And that's really interesting. But it is interesting. It goes to show how localized lightning strikes are. You know, obviously, if a lightning strike, cloud-to-ground strike, hits something, and by the way, we've gotten lots of pictures of trees literally blown apart by lightning strikes. The minute that lightning hits a tree, it turns the sap to steam, and steam takes up a larger volume than the water from which it's produced. So what happens is you turn the moisture in the tree into steam, and it blows it apart from within. And so when you see a tree that's been struck by lightning, very often what you see is a tree that's literally been pulverized because it blows up. And we've been getting a lot of pictures like that, Anna. So that lightning has been making contact. It's also capable of starting fires in homes and all the rest. So it's nothing to toy with.
No,
that's for sure.
It's not. And that just occurred to me last night as we were watching that laser light show in the sky last night. Just seeing all of nature's fury unleashed there. Pretty spectacular to see, as long as you were safe at a safe distance from everything.
That's true.
Right? Hey, what's going on with how active this weather pattern is, Tom? I'm just trying to think in recent memory how many times recently we've had these kinds of lines of storms, one after another.
Well, there's an unusually strong jet stream. That means the wind band up 10 to 30,000 feet. That's contributed. And the reason it's so strong, Anna, is because of the abnormal heat that's been going on out to the west of us in the Plain States and the western U.S., you know, it's quite interesting. We may not get the heat directly here all the time, but it perturbs the jet stream. It disturbs it. And when you buckle the jet stream in one location in the atmosphere, there are upstream and downstream effects from that. So what we've had going this summer has been a hot dome of air with 100-degree daytime temperatures out through the plains in places like Nebraska and South Dakota. Jet stream buckles around that, grows very strong because jet streams are strengthened by the fact there's very warm air next to much cooler air. The bigger the temperature spread, the stronger the jet stream, the stronger the jet stream, the stronger the thunderstorms that it moves about. And these thunderstorms reach up into those jet streams and you pull some of that wind energy down to the surface, and we see that as the straight line wind gusts that we get down here. But that's probably the driving force behind it, Anna. The fact there's been such extreme heat out to the west of us, and we've only had a sampling of it in recent days. We've actually had relatively cool weather because of the in parts of the summer, like July, because of the heat out to the west of us. Ironically, it buckles the jet. The jet then comes in here from the northwest, and that kind of delivers more moderate Canadian air and keeps us away from the 100-degree temps that are helping produce the more moderate air here.
Tom, when you say moderate air and you talk about the changes that are happening, we're going to get some cooler air, aren't we? Isn't it going to cool down a little bit in your forecast here?
Yeah, it'll be hot through Thursday, Anna, and then we get a far more comfortable air mass. I mean, more moderate levels of humidity coming here Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Now, there's some signs the heat may start building back in again later next week, and that has been pretty much the way it's gone this year. Hey, something else worth mentioning, too, on another corner of North America and the associated ocean waters, that we've got Tropical Storm Fred that's going across Hispaniola. That's Haiti and the Dominican Republic, and that's going to head toward Florida, probably as a tropical storm. It's been brushing up against land masses down there, which kind of grinds away at the circulation, but it will move over open, warm waters in and around Florida and the eastern Gulf of Mexico. So over the weekend, folks down there will be watching very closely what's going on, because there may be squally weather coming in association with Tropical Storm Fred.
Wow, more to come. At least our storms seem to be over for a little while after tonight, right? Tonight's what we're keeping our eye on, and then after that, it's going to quiet down a little bit. Is that right?
Well, I think we may have to do it again later or tomorrow night. So one more night, and then I think you're right, and I think we'll quiet down later in the weekend, later in the weekend for the weekend coming up. And we'll be ready for that by then.
Good. We've had a lot of experience, haven't we, Tom?
Yeah. Yes, we have.
I just want to say thanks to you and Bill Snyder and the entire WGN-TV weather team. There has just been, checking in with us so much and keeping our listeners informed, and we all appreciate it over here, Tom. So thank you.
Oh, I'll tell you, we love talking to our friends in radio. We just missed having you in the building with us, like in the older days.
Well, I know.
Even if telephonically here, Anna.
Yeah, no, you're right. And thanks, Tom. And I know you're busy, so thanks for the time this afternoon, and we'll see what tomorrow brings and tonight.
You bet. Always here for you, Anna. Thank you, and thanks for having us on. We enjoyed talking to you.
Thanks, Tom. Tom Skilling, sponsored by PermaSeal Basement Systems. That's going to do it for us. Stay safe tonight, and we'll see what tomorrow brings as well, as you just heard Tom talk about. We'll talk tomorrow. Steve Bertrand is up next with Chicago's afternoon news. That's after our news at the top of the hour from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.